I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. And now for a flashback. You want to unveil the latest moves at the big party. What would you do? Well, after 1970, you could get a tutorial on a show that would change urban culture and music and dance forever. Soul Train was the television show to watch for all that was cool, hip, and funky.
Hey there, and welcome aboard. You're right on time for another fun ride on the Soul Train. We're getting right back to you with a great sound by Cameo right after these very important messages.
It was produced and hosted by Don Cornelis, whose voice you heard there. How it grew from a local program in Chicago to a national institution is the subject of a new documentary on VH1 Rock Docs called Soul Train, The Hippest Trip in America. To talk more about this, we're joined by J. Kevin Swain. He's the director of the documentary. Also with us is R&B star and former member of Shalamar, Jody Watley, before becoming a star in her own right. She was one of the most popular Soul Train dancers, and they are both with us now from NPR West. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Our pleasure.
I'm dying to know what you're wearing. I was hoping it would be like a big fro or some platform boots. Probably not. No.
I have been of late wearing a big, curly, wild, messy afro.
Okay.
I do have on my trademark hoops, though smaller today than usual.
Okay. I'm so relieved. And some fabulous
no
platform
platforms.
Boots. No.
No,
oh.
I have on my Louboutin.
Oh, no. Excuse me. Okay. Well, Kevin, I won't ask what you're wearing. But, you know.
Well, you know, I'm chilling.
Chilling.
But, you know, Kevin, it's, you know, on the one hand, it occurred to me, this is a natural subject for a documentary, but I'm not sure that there had ever been one before. Had there been one before? What gave you the idea?
Well, actually, I read about my friend Anthony Maddox's company acquiring the rights, and right away I was like, I need to share this with the world. It's my responsibility to get this out there. And that was it. It was like, you know what? It's part of what I've been given, particularly by Don Cornelis, by working on his Soul Train Award shows. I think I did like 14 of them. It was like my responsibility to make sure that he gets the proper light on his show and what he gave to America and gave to the world.
How did he get the idea?
He had worked, you know, locally in Chicago as a radio announcer and as a reporter. And he got a chance to work in a TV station. And as the documentary, you know, highlights, he thought it should put a show on that highlighted, you know, Black Americans in a positive light because it just didn't exist at that time. So it's really about a need, you know, to get people, you know, to see these images. And that's, you know, how I came up with the idea.
And as we mentioned, it started as a local program in Chicago. Was it hard for him to persuade people to put the program on? I remember people will remember American Bandstand, but there really was nothing else like it that featured African-Americans on a regular basis.
Actually, he says it wasn't typical at all. I mean, the local show hit immediately. It wasn't a hard sell, and he came to, you know, get some people behind him to get on the air, you know, nationally. And everything, you know, of course, it's difficult, but it wasn't as difficult as you may think. I mean, it was instant hot.
Instant hot. Well, what made it instant hot?
Jody, let me speak to that.
First of all, young Black kids seeing themselves dancing and having a good time and looking great, the word spread like a wildfire. And seeing the performers, there was nothing like it. And so it caught on immediately.
But one of the nuggets for me in the film that I found enjoyable is that even an artist like James Brown, there's a sequence, I'm going to play it, where he did not understand that Don was the boss. And I'm just going to play that little sequence. Here it is.
I remember my first meeting with James Brown. He was from an era where you couldn't do anything big unless you had somebody, probably somebody white, backing you. He was so impressed as he looked around the studio. He said, "Brother, who's backing you on this?" And I said, "Well, James, it's just me." And then he'd pass by me again and say, "Brother, who you with on this?" I wanted to say, "You just asked me that," but out of respect, I would say, "James, it's just me."
he sounded very good humored about it.
Very much so. He's a good humored, you know, man, no matter what. That's just who Don is. I'll give you a little nugget here. I made sure that song, "Papa Don't Take No Mess," was played under that segment for Don Cornelis, because that's the kind of guy he is. and he's very stern, very, you know, he just take any mess. That's why he could control it for so long.
And he did control it for a very long time. The program was on from 1970 until 2006.
Mm-hmm.
The show moved from Chicago to Los Angeles when it went national.
Correct.
And so, Jody, you joined the program in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Right. What made you want to be on it?
Soul Train was it. Soul Train was the most popular show amongst my friends. We all watched it to see what the dancers like Pat Davis, Tyrone Proctor, and Sharon Hill and so forth, what they were wearing, what they were doing. Everybody lived to see the Soul Train line. And, you know, the artists, of course, we wanted to see the musical performances. But really, for my friends and I, it was about the dancing. And when my family moved to Los Angeles, it was my, you know, number one goal to get on the show. And I was asked by Bobby Washington after an evening church service, a boy I'd never met who, as it turned out, his dance partner was out of town. And he came up to me and asked if I wanted to go on Soul Train. And I was like so excited. And yes, 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 of course. And that really opened the door for me.
And Jody, for those who don't know, what's the line? What's the Soul Train line?
Well, back then, it would be girls and boys mixed on each side, and then eventually it would be girls on one side, boys on one side. And it's a couple's, the two people would come down the center, and it's something that you see at every wedding reception, bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah, family picnic, whatnot. It is, even if you don't know what it is, when people line up and there are two people coming down the center, that's the Soul Train line. And you bring your A game.
That's what I'm saying. I can't even believe I'm asking this question because, you know, to this day, if you walk down the hallway and there are people lined up talking, somebody will say, well, let me go on, you know, and show their moves like down the hallway, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you don't do that. I don't know.
You're the center of attention at that moment.
Maybe it's just an NPR thing. I don't know. Maybe we just do that here. So, Jody, maybe you should tell us this. There were a number of other people went on, like yourself, to go on and have big careers in the entertainment field after being dancers on Soul Train. What are some of the names?
Wow. Many people. Rosie Perez, Demita Jo Freeman, who was many years ago in the film Private Benjamin. I think Walter Payton did a Soul Train line or something.
Yes,
Kevin,
he did.
Help me out.
Rerun.
Rerun.
Know, yeah. Rerun. Fred Rerun Barry. Yeah,
exactly. A lot of dancers went on to be great choreographers and go to Japan as, like, you know, stars in their own right. You know, we interviewed them. They're like, they still get paid for being Soul Train dancers around the world.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with director J. Kevin Swain and artist Jody Watley. We're talking about a new documentary that tracks the rise of the legendary Soul Train television program. And we talked about getting paid. Jody, did you get paid?
No, that's the beauty of it. It was for the love. And it's such a time of innocence and being a dancer on the show. You just wanted to be on there. Be seen, of course. You know, don't get me wrong. Everybody wanted their moment in the spotlight. And you came and you tried to dress up and have your best moves and the whole thing. But it was for free. And we got a free cold box of chicken at lunch. And that was it. And we would have done it, you know, gladly, even without the
cold chicken.
Yes.
That was hard work, though. Come on now. That was hard work.
I think one thing you'll see in the documentary with the dancers, particularly in the earlier days, you can tell they're out there for the fun of it. You can tell by their expression to one another and just how they're getting down on the dance floor. It was a party.
But, Kevin, the film makes the point that Don Cornelius was a pretty important businessman, that it, at one point he's the only African-American to own a nationally syndicated program in the country.
I don't know if he was the only, but definitely one of the first. Here's a man from Chicago who, you know, basically started branded entertainment, if you will, integrative marketing. Things now are just everyday catchphrases and easy to see. But think about it. You know, he had Soft Sheen products, Afro Sheen, and I think he had Ebony and Jet and later on Essence. I mean, that's like, that's revolutionary for those times. Now we take it for granted. But here's a guy who, you know, made it hip, you know, to wear fros and also buy the product and then also get a free subscription if you want a scramble board.
Mm-hmm. I do have to let people know what the scramble board is for people who don't know, is that there would be at some point during the program that there would be some letters scrambled on the board and a couple would be picked to unscramble it, and it would spell out the name of an artist or some prominent figure. Mm-hmm. And and they always figured it out. I
don't you're at home watching it, too. You want to get it right also. You want to say you got it right and be a part of that as well. And that's, you know.
Well, I think it's a small thing. So I'm not, the documentary has a lot of nuggets of knowledge in it, so I don't think it'll hurt us too much
absolutely.
To say that Don Cornelius had the idea that there was so much negativity around African-Americans mm-hmm. just in the broader culture that this had to be a positive experience. And he didn't want people to tune in and mm-hmm. there be a defeat. So so they were going to figure it out. But one of the nuggets for me in the film that I found enjoyable is that Don was a great businessman and, you know, very involved with the issues of the day and all the things that were going on. But later on in the program's history, he started having a little trouble with some of the musical styles that were becoming popular. Here's an interview that he did with Curtis Blow where he talks about the fact that he really doesn't appreciate it so much. Here it is.
I mean, it doesn't make sense to old guys like me. I mean, I don't understand why they love it so much.
Never in my wildest imagination did I ever think that Don Cornelius would say what he said. My heart dropped to my feet. It devastated me.
That was an interesting moment, Kevin, wasn't it? Just for him to admit that I'm just not sure what this is all about. I didn't remember it, but it was interesting to see.
Well, I'll tell you, I remember specifically in the beginning of rap hip hop, I remember reading an article with Don, and actually it said was he wasn't interested in showcasing music that celebrated hopelessness. Mm-hmm. Now, if you think of it from that standpoint, a lot of rap had to deal with I have money, you don't. Class distinction, you know, misogyny, violence, drugs. I think that's what he really had issue with. It wasn't so much the musical style per se. And you think about it from a message standpoint, what were we saying? Here's a show that celebrated the positive images of black people. I don't think you're going to get on his show if all you can talk about is, you know, how I want to do this to you, I want to kill you, I want to maim you, I want to rape you, whatever. You know, early rap was crazy like that for a mm-hmm. while. I think that's where that came from.
But it's important to point out that Soul Train was, for a time, the place. If you were any kind of an artist at all, you wanted to be on Soul Train.
Absolutely, absolutely, especially with an older generation. It's like I remember performing on the show for the first time, and then also being on the cover of Jet magazine. And my mom, I mean, I could be on the cover of People magazine, but it really didn't mean anything unless I'd made the cover of Jet.
Well, what was that like, Jody? I meant to ask.
Soul
well, so true. But what was that like, though, when you
Soul
were performing
Train
on Soul
was like
Train?
The same thing. It was just, you know, you'd arrive when you made Soul Train, you know, you did it. I think Snoop Dogg says that in the documentary. That was it, you know.
When you went to school the next day, or when you were on the show, what was that like? Just walking around the neighborhood, going to the mall or whatever, what was that like?
You know, my personality is very mellow. And at that time, because it was all new, it was a little uncomfortable. And still at high school, I to this day, people will say, oh, you know, love you, blah, blah, blah. But I remember when you were at, I went to Dorsey High School here in Los Angeles, and they would say, you were that girl that danced on Soul Train, but you were always by yourself. With me, there's always been kind of that contrast. But I never, you know, never let any of that go to my head. And of all the things that I've achieved, I'm not that kind of person.
Man, you messed up. You could have had your own table in the cafeteria.
Right?
No, I never
Jody?
Worked it. I know, I never worked it like
goodness.
That.
Oh, my goodness. You could have had a Jody Watley line. Oh, my goodness. Your own locker? I mean, come
no,
on.
No, always is stay humble. That's oh. me.
Exactly.
Well, Kevin, when do you think the legacy of Soul Train is?
It's interesting you ask that. For me, Don is one of my mentors. No two ways about it. You know, I'm a producer and a director. The legacy for me is here's a man who had a vision and went for it and won. And I like to think I'm much like that. When I first worked for Don in like 87, I think, I was so just like, wow, this is what I want to be. I want to do it like this, own everything. I mean, come on. I think now we take for granted somewhat, you know, Diddy has this thing and so does Russell and a lot of hip hop cats and American business period. But now you think in the 70s, he did a really incredible thing by owning his own rights. So, you know, personally, my legacy is Don as an example of black entrepreneurship, if you will.
And from my point of view of when being a dancer on the show, and it was something that I never really thought about until seeing the documentary that he also employed black men and black women in key positions. And I thought, it's like, wow, everybody on staff, the cameraman, the stage manager, the talent coordinator, it was always a sea of color. And I also think that's important to note as well.
How is he, by the way?
He's great. On the panel discussion, he was so just like up and awake and on. It was, he couldn't stop talking.
Overly candid in some areas.
Well, why did the show
stop
then, Kevin? Why did the show go away? And even after all that time, it was like 30-some years on the air. Why did it go away? 36 years.
Well, I think, you know, put this way, it's the longest running show in television syndication history. So at some point, you got to say, okay, I mean, let's go home and, you know, let's take it on in.
I think he said in the documentary that at a certain point, as the host of this music program, he just thought, you know, the distance between himself and the audience kept getting greater and greater. And he thought, why not go out on top? But he actually did have one more host, though. There were subsequent hosts after he stopped, right?
Yeah.
Shamora Moore was probably the biggest of those. But I think Soul Train without Don Kinnear is like Hail Mary, but not the Blue Notes. You never go platinum, you know?
So can either of you say it? I can't say it the way he says it. I'm wishing you the way he would sign off. Come on, can you do it?
No one can say it like that.
Wishing you
love. Do it. But
come
we
on.
Wish you love, peace, and soul.
J. Kevin Swain is the director of the new documentary, Soul Train, The Hippest Trip in America. It premieres on VH1 this Saturday, February 6th. You want to check your local listings. Jody Watley is a former Soul Train dancer, member of the group Shalimar, and a Grammy Award-winning artist. They were both kind enough to join us from NPR West. And I'll just try it. I'm wishing you both love, peace, and soul. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Brecton Booker, Monica Evstatieva, Jasmine Garst, Lori Grant, Lee Hill, Douglas Hopper, Arjun Hutchins, Emily Oxenschlager, and Jennifer Longmire Wright. Our intern this semester is Danielle Gerson. Our senior editor is Louise Clemens. Our senior producer is Alicia Montgomery. The program is directed by Rob Sachs. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more tomorrow.